What a ceiling when you're dealing with recapping banks who are clapping. Thanks, that's nice. Spike the panic like the Titanic. Once you've struck the ice, you are stuck to pay the price.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Alan Lichtman, who is a professor of history at American University, where he studies both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all presidential elections since 1984. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And of course, just in terms of predicting the next president, the problem that Obama has with calling the bluff of the Republicans who are threatening to destroy the full faith and credit of the United States unless they get 100% of their way would be that the president would be left with the detritus. And as Donald Trump just said on Fox News with Fox and Friends, rather gleefully said that, well, you know, the Republicans will get blamed in the short while if the economy crashes. But in a year or so's time, when Obama's running for president, he's going to take responsibility for it, and he's going to get creamed. So I don't want to put you on the spot with your predictions, but what's your sense of...
Let me say a couple of things about that, Ian. First of all, can you imagine anything more cynical, more treacherous, and dare I say more un-American for conservative Republicans who claim to be patriotic, than to let our economy crash, to let tens of millions of people suffer, perhaps grievously, in order to advance their political objective of defeating Barack Obama in 2012. It's hard to imagine anything more reprehensible than that. Secondly, they're only half right. It is true that ultimately, as Herbert Hoover, someone who should know, said, the president gets the credit for the rain and the blame for the rain and the credit for the sunshine. But that's only one of the 13 factors, the state of the economy going into the election. There are, you know, many other factors, including whether the Republicans have a charismatic candidate, Obama's own charismatic personality, the killing of Osama bin Laden, the lack of a scandal that would, nonetheless, despite the Republicans' efforts to destroy our stability in America, undermine our society, Barack Obama is going to win in 2012. So they might as well get off this awful kick.
Well, the thing that I find extraordinary, Alan Lichtman, is that, and it's perhaps the sort of reductio absurdum of this binary system we have in the press, where you have everything is equal and opposite, leading to the absurdity that if you interview a Holocaust survivor, you are therefore obliged to interview a Holocaust denier. And I see that in the way that Boehner got equal time with the president, and that's the way they're treating it now. And yet one side is willing and threatening to destroy the full faith and credit of the United States if they don't get 100% of their way. The other guy's not doing that, but yet they're equal in the debate. And that I just think that the country's lost its mind in terms of proportionality here.
Yeah, I mean, the press does have some responsibility, not simply to let anyone flap their lips on the air, but to exercise something of a gatekeeper role here. After all, you know, one responsibility of the press is to tell us who's telling the truth, who's fooling us, what's good for the country, and what isn't. And the truth is, of course, that the great majority of the American people are not behind Boehner. They're behind the president's position. Two-thirds say, like the president, they want a combination of spending cuts and tax increases. Every authority in the field says you need to do both, and yet we're holding the country hostage to a few ideologues in the House. It's extraordinary, and they're getting all this credit. I laid it all out in my book that you referred to, White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, in which I said, Republican conservatives, rather, have nothing to do with fiscal responsibility. They have nothing to do with free markets. They have nothing to do with individualism. What it's all about when it comes to economics is protecting private enterprise, particularly from labor and government regulation and taxation. And that's exactly what's going on here. They're holding the country hostage in order to keep in line tax breaks, benefits for the wealthiest corporations in America, for the upper 2% of our population who don't need it, at a time, get this, when the distribution of income in America has gotten so unequal that we now have a distribution that's the same as it was on the eve of the Great Depression of 1929. And history teaches us no society can remain viable and stable and democratic under those circumstances. And just today, a new report came out from the Pew Center that this has tremendous racial and ethnic implications, that not only has the gap, not between the rich and the poor anymore, but between the rich and the rest of us grown enormously, so too has the racial gap, so that whites today have 20 times the wealth of African Americans and nearly that of Latinos. This is not a healthy situation, and those phonies in the Tea Party are trying to perpetuate and extend this.
Again, I'm speaking with American University historian Alan Lichtman, the author of White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement. But in a couple of ironies here, Alan Lichtman, one is that the Tea Party looked like they're going to scuttle Boehner's bill, that Obama won't even have to veto it because the Tea Party caucus found some minor flaw in this otherwise totally inflexible wish list that they put forth. But what is so clear about the Tea Party, and I'm again, I fault the press for falling for this idea that somehow this was a grassroots populist movement, or albeit a right-wing populist movement. It is so evident that the Tea Party is entirely AstroTurf, they're entirely faithful whores to the billionaires. They are absolutely the most faithful billionaire backers in the entire United States Congress, so much so that people like the Koch brothers have got them. They're chiefs of staff. There's a study recently showing that the staffers that the Tea Party have taken on are former lobbyists. You know, they've done a study called "From Hired Guns to Hired Hands." So this is the Tea Party. They're 100% captives of big business and big business lobbyists.
And that's what their policies are designed to do, to make those folks richer. And again, it's no longer at the expense of the poor. It's at the expense of everyone.
Take away the history here. You're a historian. Doesn't it offend you? I mean, they're trying to pretend that they're somehow the descendants of the Boston Tea Party. I mean,
it totally.
Let's get real here. You know.
Yeah, because as I said, this started in the 70s when business the conservative movement goes back much farther. But the big money flowing into so-called grassroots movements began in the 1970s when the big corporations and the wealthy realized they could buy out these folks, and that they could hide behind this phony veneer of free enterprise, rugged individualism, individual freedom, which has nothing to do what they're really all about. And over the past 30 years, since the modern conservative revolution, the top 5% has seen their incomes almost triple, while the rest of us have barely increased by 1% a year. And that's the truth behind the modern conservative movement, private enterprise. And then the other side, of course, is controlling our personal behavior, and particularly controlling women. What does that have to do with individual freedom and liberty?
Well, it's again the mythology. I mean, to some extent, I fault the president for not seizing on the popular outrage against what happened on Wall Street, because that after all was what galvanized the Tea Party into existence. Of course, it turns out it's been a massive hoax, that they're actually on the side of the billionaires and the hedge fund people who brought about the Wall Street catastrophe in the first place. But
that's exactly right. And, you know, I do fault the president for not being enough out front on this in terms of controlling those who time and again, you know, how many times do they have to fool us? You know, time and again have enriched themselves at the expense of everybody else, and they don't care because they know they're never going to be held accountable. And, you know, where is the president on the really big issues of our time, like the distribution of income, like the challenge of climate, catastrophic climate change, our environment, our air, our river, our oceans, our very survival on the planet is at stake? And, you know, the Tea Party is lock, stock, and barrel against that, of course. But the president really has not led on those issues. And that's very much tied to the economy. The old smokestack industries are not coming back. We need a new technological revolution that moves us off the fossil fuel economy and moves us into a new economy based on clean, renewable sources of energy. And we've been diddling on that, doing nothing now, for 12 years. It's a real crime, and it's not going to happen unless grassroots individuals and grassroots organizations really push the political class on the environment and on global climate change. You know, here are these huge issues, and we're not even speaking about them.
Again, I'm speaking with historian Alan Lichtman at American University, who studies both the American right and the presidency. Although, to the president's credit, now a lot of people saying the speech that he just gave was far too late. It should have been, he should have laid down the marker earlier and built a grassroots upswell. Apparently, the phones at the Capitol were jammed and the systems were, circuits were overloaded.
That's
because
right.
There was a response. But had this happened earlier, perhaps. But the point I wanted to make was, in the president's defense, was that he laid out a lot of what clearly bothers me and I think bothers you, and that is the unfairness of the idea that the people who have benefited most in the last few decades are being protected at the expense of bringing the entire economy down, just so that billionaires don't have to pay any more taxes when they're getting such a free ride at the moment. And he was pretty clear about it, Obama. And
about time.
and he also pointed out that hedge fund managers pay a less percentage of tax than their secretaries do. So do you think that the American people have a sense of fairness anymore?
I think they do. I think that, you know, the fact that two-thirds of the American people want tax increases as part of any compromise package shows that there is at least a rudimentary sense of fairness out there among the American people. But, you know, it's not as if that sense has been nurtured and developed and moved by our political leadership in order to build a grassroots movement. You know, there has been very little grassroots activity on the left. You saw it during the campaign, but unfortunately, by not taking forward positions on a lot of issues, by expanding the war in Afghanistan, Barack Obama in many ways lost the enthusiasm of his base and lost the enthusiasm of American grassroots politics. Sometimes I fear, Ian, that the only way we're going to really recognize our huge problems, like our waterways, our oceans, our environment, global change, the need for a new fossil fuel-free economy, is if there's some enormous catastrophe in this country. It took the Great Depression to all those, you know, many decades of American history to bring a modicum of social justice, and I fear it may take a crisis of that dimension to bring it about again.
Well, but the organization seems to be on the side of those who are I want to take down what little social safety next that was developed after this catastrophe with the Great Depression. And the legacy of FDR has been on the table, for God's sake, in these negotiations.
Yeah,
that's,
you know,
what we hear. I mean, the worst thing that could happen to many people's mind is that the Republicans would suddenly gain some sanity and accept Obama's deal.
I hear you. You know, this sounds a bit old-fashioned, but we need another New Deal. People don't understand the New Deal. The New Deal was not a big spending program. At the height of the New Deal, the federal budget, get this, was under $10 billion, even, you know, accounting for enormous increases in inflation. That's a tiny federal budget. What the New Deal really did was enormously increase the opportunities for Americans, their security, and few people realize this, enormously increase the productivity of the American economy through a transformation of our infrastructure. In those days, it was things like bridges and roads and airports. That's what we need today. It's no longer bridges and roads and airports. It's public transit. It is solar energy. It is geothermal energy. It is wind energy. We need a New Deal for that new kind of infrastructure. Or even if you want to talk about a Republican president, we need the model of Dwight Eisenhower and the building of the interstate highway. We need that modernized for the 21st century. And that requires a sense of the common good, and that's going to be hard to get at.
Well, just in the last couple of minutes then, Alan Lichtman, what is your sense then of the dilemma that I think Obama's put himself in, where he's clearly trying to reach out to the center and to look like the real adult, but if any of these concessions he makes become a part of a compromise on Social Security, Medicare, he's going to already disappointed progressives and on the left are going to be even more alienated.
Well, that's right, but I don't think that's going to happen. You know what I think is going to happen? And I could well be wrong on this, but I'll put on my predictor cap. I think Obama may have to exercise his constitutional powers and increase the debt limit on his own and say, to hell with you right-wing Republicans who want to scuttle programs that have lifted scores of millions of people out of poverty, that establish basic security for Americans to protect the few. I'm not going there, and I am going to constitutionally lift the debt ceiling myself under, you know, powers that I have in the Constitution. And, you know,
that's the 14th Amendment you're talking about. You're talking about Section 4 of the 14th Amendment.
Absolutely.
So that
I think he has the authority. There was a piece on this in the New York Times, you know, mm-hmm. which is not exactly a left-wing rag, you know. So even mainstream opinion is being moved to that. I think that's far better than acceding to these horrendous cuts that the Republicans want, with absolutely no sacrifice from those who benefited so much over the last 30 years, and, you know, really need to function for the common good again. Right. You know, these Tea Party folks claim to be the heirs of the founding fathers in the tradition of the Boston Tea Party, and yet what they are doing is so fundamentally un-American. You know, Thomas Jefferson, you know, the champion of ordinary people, has to be turning over in his grave.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Alan Lichtman.
Anytime, Ian. My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's professor of history at American University, where he studies both the American right and the presidency. His books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking to a political strategist about the Obama strategy. When it's up to you.